This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians this week. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. Joining us, as always, is Craig Lenz.
Hello, everybody.
And that music you hear in the background is being provided by one Creighton Harrington.
He is truly talented.
He said about an hour before we started the show, hey, can I bring my guitar? And I can do the national anthem before the beginning of the show? And Greg's face was like, oh, God.
I have never hated Spangle more in my entire life than in that moment. Oh, yeah, bring it on. It'll be great.
Yeah. I said, no, I have a headache. I don't want to deal with this. And then I was like, you know what? Let's let the boy try it.
You didn't steal one of your wife's my dolls?
He goes, truly, if there ever was a week for us to start with the national anthem, this is it.
Exactly. We are patriots.
You guys must love me not being on the mic. We love you not being on the mic. Are you kidding?
This is my favorite way of Creighton, when he can only be attacked and not respond.
Exactly. Welcome to We Are Libertarians, as usual. We shut your guitar off for now.
We did.
Yeah.
Yep, no. we are into the show at this point.
Yep. It has been a busy, busy week, and there is a lot to talk about this week, isn't there, Greg?
There is so much to talk about, I don't know how we're going to get it all in today.
Well, we won't. there's obviously the tragedy in Boston, the tragedy in Texas, there is the gun bill going down, the immigration bill set
CISPA.
To pass, CISPA getting passed.
It has just been
passed the House at least.
Because we've had two dry weeks of news, and now it all came at once.
Right.
I wish this could have been, well, I won't go that far.
Yeah.
That's probably just a bad train of thought.
It's been a bit of a rough week. So what should we start with? Should we start with Boston?
You know what? I think Creighton would prefer if we actually started with the gun bill and it getting voted down.
Okay.
I believe that's the order we decided on earlier today.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the gun bill and what took place, Greg Lenz.
Well, Pat Toomey, senator from Pennsylvania, and I believe his name's Joe Manchin, a senator, Democrat senator from
Joe
West
Manchin.
Virginia.
Yep.
They had put forward a bill on gun control, and what it essentially, it really was a pretty moderate bill, but it would have regulated private transfers of guns between any family member other than like grandfather, grandchild, brother, sister, and then also mental health background checks, and then background checks on anyone that bought a gun off the internet or at a trade show.
Sure. And also provided a few, there were some compromises in there, so things like allowing more guns to be sold across state lines. So there were some things that were, you know,
Some sweeteners
for the pro-gun advocates. But ultimately, I felt like it was a lot of bureaucracy.
It was. It explicitly outlawed the creation of a registry, and then it also would have, it created like a 15-year prison sentence if you did use it to create a registry, if any of the administrators or bureaucrats did. But I felt that I was amazed how quickly the NRA was able to organize against it. They were, because they've been getting hammered in the press, you know, with the idea of putting armed guards in schools.
Right.
And then literally in a week, Joe Manchin thought, I mean, you go back 1 week, Joe Manchin thought it was going to get, and it didn't. It ended up getting killed.
Right. And then Harry Reid today pulled it off of the table. It was, what was it, 54 to
54 to 46.
Right. Obviously, you know, libertarians, we are pro-gun. We are pro-Second Amendment. We don't believe that it's just about hunting. We don't believe that it's just about sports. It's about your right to protect yourself, your property, your life, and ultimately your liberty as well. And liberty means that you have the ability to fight the government if you need to.
Mm-hmm. It's a guaranteed right in the Bill of Rights. I believe the exact language is that Congress shall not inhibit a state from raising a militia or infringe upon any individual's right to bear arms.
And Barack Obama had what a lot of libertarians are calling a tantrum.
He did.
Last night. You know, he started out with one of the Sandy Hook fathers, one of the Sandy Hook victims, coming forward and introducing him and talking about him. Let me ask this. Let's start with Creighton. The Sandy Hook families and other victims of gun violence, people like Gabby Giffords, do you feel that it's the president, as Rand Paul said, the president is exploiting them and using them for emotional gain? Or do you agree with the president that, I know this is a silly question, do you agree with Rand Paul or Barack Obama, Creighton, but that the victims of violence and gun rights have their right to come forward and they may be better qualified than anybody to come out and speak about gun violence?
I think that definitely they have the right to lobby the government for any type of legislation, just like anybody does. And them being in their situation, they have plenty of reason to lobby the government because they feel that passing any type of gun control will affect more safety or whatever their reasoning may be. But in this particular instance, in this situation, I do not think that they were – I think that they were pulled on the part of the Democratic Party to basically use them for emotion, use them as an image, use them to
– Sure.
It was just – it kind of was disgusting. I mean, if they would only been there for – You know, they said if they said well, our hearts go out to the Newtown people as they pass this stuff, as they were working on it, that's one thing. But if you march these families out in front of cameras every single time you talk about it, I mean, every single time it was talked about, these families were on there. We're next to the president, next to whoever was talking about it, trying to make sure that everyone knew these people were hurt by guns and we're talking about guns right now. You get to that point and you know that they're using them for political purposes. It's not just, you know, genuine empathy.
Oh, yeah, at his adolescent hissy fit yesterday of a press conference.
Didn't it feel so good to watch that?
Oh, it did. It did.
I'm sorry. I know that we're not supposed to be shallow like that, but man, that felt so good to see him just sit there and whine like a little 12-year-old girl.
Oh, it was total schadenfreude, just enjoying the misery of others. It was great.
And then this morning I was watching Morning Joe, and Mika Brzezinski was the only one on there, and every single time they'd come back from a break or something, and they would talk about the gun bill, she'd start out with, and these cowards in Washington just shamefully not passing this bill, and I was like,
but the problem is that when you hear people say that, you don't feel like, or you don't think that they're actually coming through. They're speaking from a place of emotion. They're not studying the bill and examining the bill and breaking it down and saying, well, this is what's going to help actually stop something. You're just adding a layer of bureaucracy on that. How's that going to make people safer by making them go through one other hoop, background checks?
Well,
you know,
I
do stop.
I think one thing that's important to realize from this is, well, two points. One, if the poll that they kept referencing, the 90% of Americans poll, if that was a valid poll, which I have heard was not a valid poll, if it was a valid poll, then it just shows how irrelevant national polls are to Washington politics. Not because they're out of touch, but because that's how the system was set up.
Well, it was a public policy poll, that PPP, and they're notorious for asking.
You know, I heard the
PPP,
Democrats were oversampled like 38-20
or PPP,
something.
That's all they do.
PPP is the one who, during the 2012 elections, they put Honey Boo Boo in a presidential poll, but they refused to put in Gary Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. They're probably the least, I would say, respected polling firm.
Sure.
Probably the least, of the major ones, like Gallup, Pew.
Rasmussen. Yeah, I just heard that they had oversampled Democrats like crazy,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't even have a huge sampling base. Like, I want to know what the margin of error on that poll was, because if it was anything over 3, then I think they should just throw it out entirely.
But see, that's the thing, is that it's so referenced, and it is, the media talks about it all of the time. And it's always in, you know, when Wolf Blitzer, and a breaking defeat, a horrible defeat for the president. It's an exciting moment here on CNN. He likes to use lots of exclamation adverbs. Hey, this is an exciting, great moment, blah, blah, blah. 90%, isn't it shocking that 90% of Americans want some sort of action and the gun control, and they support this bill, and yet they didn't pass it?
Well,
I mean, it's just constantly referenced, but nobody knows
And it's funny because, I mean, if anyone's ever seen Frank Luntz being candid, before he got big on Fox News, Frank Luntz was, like, outspoken on trying to prove how polls could say whatever you wanted them to say.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it's true. You can make a poll say whatever you want based upon how it's asked. If they could have asked it, do you want to stop gun violence? And that could have been the question. And to the people, you know, to the people who are referencing the poll, they'll say, oh, you want to stop gun violence, therefore you support this bill.
Creighton.
90% of people want to stop gun violence, therefore they want to support the bill. It's, I mean, that's the kind of wordplay they use whenever they bring up these polls.
Let's take a poll right now of the three of us that are here. Do you want the mentally ill to own guns? Raise your hand. Okay, none of us raised our hands. Of course, because even people who are pro-Second Amendment don't want mentally ill people to have guns. I mean, so how do you stop the mentally ill from getting guns? Because the road we're going down is that if you've been on Prozac or if you've been on
Adderall,
Celexa, you know, Celexa,
Lipitor, Paxil,
those mild anti-anxiety drugs, that would mean that you don't qualify for a gun license. I mean, and those are fairly mild. It doesn't mean you're mentally deranged. You're capable of handling a firearm. But how do we as a society keep mentally ill people from getting guns, Creighton?
I think one thing you have to, it has to be a sort of a, I think in general, it would be, I don't know. I think the appropriate response has, it's often used that the way the solution to this problem is a prohibitive effort. How do we stop X group of people? How do we stop this type of person from owning a gun? And I think the appropriate response is you can't prohibit anybody from owning a gun. It's just they're going to find a way to get a gun if they really want one. I think we've learned that through every type of prohibition there is. So the appropriate response is not how do we stop people from owning a gun, or stop bad people from owning a gun. It's how do we get more good people to own guns? How do we have more? And a lot of people might listen to this and say, oh my God, he's freaking crazy. How do we get more? The solution to gun violence is more guns? Yeah, I mean, if more people who are law-abiding own guns and have the means to protect themselves, then that's more likelihood that these shootings don't happen.
Perfect example is that Georgia town that legislated every town member had to own a gun. They have had no petty crime in like 2 years.
Yeah, but that's also the government forcing people to do something.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, that violates it, but it helps.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily calling for that, but I mean, it's just like, it's kind of like these armchair arguments that people bring up whenever this debate comes up. I mean, they're kind of valid. Every gun-free zone is a hotbed for gun violence. And it's because there are no guns. There is no one there to stop them from getting shot. I mean, I'm not saying that I want, you know, I don't know. I would argue that a teacher, if they're an adult, if they've gone through the proper means of owning a weapon, them having a weapon on their person in class should not be viewed as something to be, you know, scorned. I mean, yeah, okay, if a kid sees a gun, he might get scared. But, I mean, who's going to say a teacher's not going to walk through a class with an AR-15 around their chest? But these things, when the Newtown guy goes door to door and starts trying to cap kids with an assault rifle, one teacher with a gun shooting through the window of the door, it's over. No more kids dead.
The basic premise is that you look for freedom solving every problem. When you've got a problem, how can we solve this problem with more freedom, with more liberty? And by putting further prohibitions on things, we know fundamentally that prohibition doesn't work.
No.
You know, it only keeps the people, it enables, it creates black markets, and it enables criminals to flourish. And they're the only ones who have those, you know, things like booze or pot or cocaine or weapons. I mean, that's just a fundamental, I mean, it's, You can't disprove that.
No, England, 1997, they outlaw all small arms, any short barrel pistol, anything along those lines. From 99 to 2009, they had an 89% increase in crime. I mean, right. It does not work ever.
Right. Same thing's happened in Australia where they've outlawed all firearms. Their violent crime rate went through the roof. I mean, fundamentally, it's just a matter of, you know, people who obey laws won't have guns, but the people who don't obey laws are the ones that you got to fear getting shot from, and they're not going to obey gun laws. I mean, it's so simple, it's so like commonsensical that people ask, like, well, it can't be that simple, but it really is that simple. I mean,
mutually assured destruction is a strong driver of human action.
Meaning what?
That if I come in this apartment and I know you're both armed and I may be mentally ill, I am going to be less likely to fire as long as I have some degree of rationality.
Are you going to mess with Maya?
No, never. No.
I mean, a great example. I mean, these mass shootings don't happen at gun shows. They don't happen in gun stores. They don't happen in police departments. They don't happen where there's a lot of firearms around.
That's not true, because someone walked into Don's Guns about 6 months ago and tried to rob the place.
Oh, well.
Talk about being mentally ill. You walk into a gun store to rob them, and especially, of all places, Don's Guns.
Let me rephrase. They don't happen as often.
Right.
And they're not as, there's not as high a body count.
Yeah, Don's Guns is notorious here in Indianapolis, and they're on the FBI's worst gun dealers. It's this infamous commercial, I don't love to sell guns, I just love to make money.
I'm not
about making money, I just love to sell guns.
And then he like moves his fingers and
he's like
this old
crazy old man.
So somebody walked in there, and guess what? The only people that died were the people trying to rob the place. Hey honey, come here. I want to introduce you on the podcast. This is your punishment for spreading this place with more chemicals than
contrary
ever
to
before.
Popular belief, Spangle's wife is real.
There's a running joke that you don't actually exist, so sit down here real quick. I know you got to go.
You're even getting her on the screen.
Yeah,
so.
I'm putting her on screen.
I see my hair.
We know you just did your hair because you just sprayed more perfume and chemicals in the air than
I know. My eyes
who
are
knows.
Going crazy right now.
I know. It's awful.
It's a chemtrail.
I go through this every single morning.
Don't say chemtrail.
She chemtrails and fluorides me.
You're weird.
This is Samantha. Samantha, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
What do you think of Barack Obama?
He needs to lower the gas prices.
Okay, why?
Because they're too expensive.
There you go.
Yep.
So what do you think about taxes?
They're too high.
Who'd you vote for in the presidential election?
Romney.
Why?
Because he was something different.
Mormon.
All right. Thanks, honey.
Oh, roasted.
That's my wife.
Yes.
My wife does not care about politics. Anything you'd like to say to the listeners of the podcast?
I don't know.
What are you doing with your lives listening to us every week?
What do you think about all these guys traipsing through our living room every Thursday night?
It's cool. I get free beer sometimes.
That's
true. She does get free beer.
And pizza.
Yeah, I have to keep her at a 0.08 blood alcohol content at all times. What are you shooting at the... Yeah. Get out of here.
Perfect. That fits the theme perfectly.
Oh, boy. So
I think there's an interest... Oh, kind of more interesting...
She didn't perform like normal because when she comes... She gets on a rant and she'll just go on a rant about Barack Obama. I think she's a little microphone shy. She's just like, I don't know where he's going to find all this money. He just is... I don't know. I'm like, calm down. You sound like Creighton when somebody says something mean about Star Wars or Rand Paul in Star Wars.
Oh, so. The universe isn't ready for
that. That Patton Oswalt video was awesome.
Yeah. Bad taste in my mouth about that one. But, all right. So let's wrap up with the guns and then move on to other stuff.
Well, there's two things
about.
I think we still have to cover. One, I think the main point that people who listen who may not agree with us are going to point out is that the bill didn't try and take your guns away or ban it. It just wanted universal background checks. And I can understand the appeal of having a universal background check for everybody. And I think, and a lot of people, you know, they were afraid that if the federal government takes this step of having a nationwide background check service or however it's done or a mandate, then it's just, then they fall prey to the slippery slope fallacy is what it's called.
Next comes a registry.
The thing is, though, when it comes to government, it's not a fallacy. That's only a fallacy in like every other type of... But when it comes to government, slippery slope is not a fallacy.
Look at smoking bans. Yep. It's the perfect example of what they're trying to do. Oh, well, it's just this. That's it. That's all it is.
And I think it's important to understand how they're thinking about this. I will go out and say that I don't think that Obama or Biden or any of these people that tried to pass this legislation intended to have a registry. When they made this legislation, I think they honestly, in their heart of hearts, just thought a universal background check would work. And if it didn't work, and what makes it a slippery slope is that the answer when government policy fails, the answer is not to remove the policy. The answer is always more policy.
No, mm-hmm. I think their intention for people like Barack Obama and Joe Biden and especially Dianne Feinstein is to completely eradicate the majority of firearms in this nation.
Well, I think that's their pet. I think that's their what they want to do, like in their ideal world. But what
right,
I'm talking
that's
about,
like the liberty. That's like their version of the world.
Yeah, but I'm talking about in this bill, with what they were trying to accomplish with this bill and their intentions with this bill. I don't think that they intended this to be, you know, the first step in a line of steps. I don't think that's what they intended. However, my point is that the way government works is that may not be what they intended to happen, but what will happen is if it doesn't work, which it wouldn't work, then when it fails, they'll say, well, and, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, they'll say, well, I mean, we tried this universal background check and it just didn't work.
Nope.
The only thing left to do is to start having people register guns so we can track them. And to them, it's not like they intended it now, but it's just inevitable. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's inevitable for it to happen. So that's the argument I think that a lot of people. So when it comes to guns, I mean, the thing I'm saying is just like, well, the government doesn't even need to get involved in it at all. The federal government doesn't need to get involved in it at all. I mean, we don't need to go down that road. Let's go through every single possible every single avenue we can, other than the federal government first. And if all those fail, then we might think about never talking about federal government doing it again. I mean, because it's just one of those things. It's like, I'd rather be safe than sorry. I'd rather the federal government not be universal background checks if it removes the possibility of them in the future increasing their power over guns.
I mean, I know here in Indiana, you have to go through a background check, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, are there states where you don't have to have background checks?
I'm not sure. I don't think there is, though. I think every state, you have to have a... I mean, I'm not talking from an expert.
Personal experience.
Yeah, I'm talking.
In
I'm not...
Indiana, you do, but the only one I don't believe you may not have to is Texas. I think that might be Texas and maybe Arizona.
That sounds about right. But I mean, from what I understand, every state, by and large, you have some sort of background check for at least in store.
Always.
Yes.
Almost always
yes.
In store.
And not even just that, gun shows.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, if you go to a gun show and you buy a weapon, there isn't this magical gun show loophole that is so prevalent like they say. I mean, you do get a background check at a gun show. I mean, they happen because the people that are selling at gun shows are the same dealers that are selling at the gun shop around the corner. I mean, it's these are the people at the gun shows.
And if you feel like, if you go into a gun... Oh, whoa. What was that?
The hell was that? That was weird.
It was
like full on in our headphones.
Yeah.
That was Paul Gable, and I'll explain why he's calling in a minute.
If you go buy a gun right now, the Brady Act from 94 requires that you do a background check from in store, and you register with the NICS, and they don't even enforce the law. That's the hilarious part about it. They never enforce it because they say, oh, well, it was so far in your past, you don't have to. You're not suspect to any penalty. And it's like 5 years in prison if you lie on the form, and yet people do it consistently.
Right.
Well, I mean, and also let's not forget to point out that the laws in Connecticut were stricter than the federal.
As strict as you can be.
I mean, they were super strict, and they kept the kid from getting a weapon other than just stealing.
Yep.
I mean, And that's the thing that I think is crazy is you would think if they were doing this villain response to the Newtown tragedy, then they would do something about theft because that's how he got a hold of these weapons. He got a hold of them through theft, and they would maybe do something about unarmed people in gun-free zones. But the response was not to those particular problems, which were the problems of that incident. The response was something that is totally irrelevant to the Newtown massacre. Totally irrelevant. Background checks would have done absolutely nothing to stop this.
They
event.
Worked.
I mean,
didn't
he,
you
he
say
stole
he...
the guns? Yeah. He stole them from a person. You can't stop that with a background check.
Didn't you say he tried to get a gun? And
he went into a store, tried to purchase a gun. The system worked. He was turned away, so he took his mom's.
Okay. Well, there you go.
It wouldn't have, and that's why when Barack Obama has a press conference and stands up there and goes, we can't make this political. Why did you fly in all these Newton families that have, it has no bearing on them whatsoever?
Right. He's done nothing but make it political.
Yeah. He's just like a little petulant child.
I think it's been an interesting week for Barack Obama. I mean, you had a, oh, you were going to talk about
a
list.
Are we moving on?
Yeah.
Oh, there's one more thing I think we should talk about because you mentioned it in the chat. Okay. He tried to imply that the manipulation of the Senate rules was unconstitutional.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you about that because the hot topic, you know, probably in the next couple weeks is going to be the constitutionality of the filibuster, not the Rand type of filibuster, but the forcing a cloture vote of 60 votes and the Senate rules. He whined about how that wasn't constitutional or that wasn't proper, even though that he and Joe Biden did it all the time when Bush was president.
Conveniently.
Conveniently. Now they're against it. I mean, so do you, in your scholarly opinions, think that that is constitutional to force 60 votes on pretty much every bill?
Oh, yeah. Totally constitutional. There's no part of the Constitution that specifies what the difference, or if it has to be a simple majority or not, as far as passing legislation. So, for a quick rundown for people who may not understand what's going on with this when we say Senate rules. So, every single part of government, essentially every single, you know, formal meeting body ever, they all run on parliamentary procedure. So, the Senate, the House, I mean, every single meet, like the Mason meetings, they all run on parliamentary procedure. But the specific things as far as how they run their meetings is in their rule book. So, like the House, you used to be able to do an old-fashioned talky filibuster in the House back in the 1800s. And then there were so many representatives that they amended the rules to make it so you were limited to 5 minutes. So that's why you don't see filibusters in the House anymore. It's because you're limited to 5 minutes speaking time unless you get unanimous consent to take some other people's time or something. But the way it works is the rules are just basically how the chair has to operate the meeting. You know, the rules say if there's no rule to say that we can have dogs in the building, then you can't bring dogs in the building. But if somebody motions to change I motion that we change the rules to allow
dogs
for disabled people so they can walk down the aisle of the floor of the Senate, and then somebody says, I second the motion, then they vote on it, and then it becomes part of the rules. I mean, that's kind of what's going on. But the Senate rules are, they have this, like, the filibuster Rand Paul did was a old-fashioned talk-a-bill-to-death filibuster. Those are the kinds that, basically, the rules don't really say anything specifically about it. What it is he just got the floor and he can talk as long as he wants. He has the floor. It's just how the parliamentary procedure works. No one can take the chair doesn't recognize anyone but him until he relinquishes his recognition. This legislation, though, wasn't that kind of filibuster. What it was essentially it was kind of like they passed a resolution kind of filibuster. They said, we're going to filibuster on a piece of paper, and they submitted it, and it got enough votes to pass for that filibuster. And then they basically, what it happened was enough people voted on cloture, which allows, instead of a 51 people being needed to pass a bill, they needed 60 people to beat the filibuster, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's why it took 60 people to vote for this bill to pass. And when Obama is saying that it's unconstitutional, he just doesn't know what the heck. He's just upset. I mean, he's like Chris said, he's used it a million times when he was in the Senate. It's widely used on a number of fronts, and it's not unconstitutional because it doesn't affect. I mean, the Constitution doesn't specify how Senate rule. I mean, they even imply that these bodies will have their own rules.
Yeah,
in the Constitution.
Evolve.
Yeah, they say as the rules may allow in the Constitution somewhere. So, I mean, this is not unconstitutional for them to require more than 50. I mean, the only time I think that it's specified as how many people must vote to pass something is on amendments.
Yeah, constitutional amendments.
Yeah, they say 3/4 of both bodies must concur, and then it goes to the states where 3/4 must ratify it. That's the only time. I mean, it's... it's not unconstitutional, and I think it's something that, you know, here in the next few weeks we're going to hear about the nuclear option, which is basically the chair in the Senate doesn't really have any power. The majority leader has all the power. According to the Senate rules, the majority leader has all the freaking power. But the chair is technically the vice president, but you have the president of the Senate pro tempore, which is usually the oldest serving member. And what they do is they're the guy that's up there, and they say the gentleman from if you've ever seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, it was the guy with the gavel. It's like the gentleman from Georgia that rises. What is the gentleman from Georgia? Blah blah blah. And then he'll say, "I ask unanimous consent to do this." And basically, the chair just organizes the meeting. He just says, "Okay, I recognize."
He's like the mediator and moderator.
Yeah, he just
gets
it, but he doesn't have any power. Mm-mm. So what they can do is the chair, the majority leader could stand up if they're doing a filibuster. The majority leader could stand up and say, "We want to go blah 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 blah." He says, "The chair does not recognize the gentleman from Nevada, or the senator from Nevada." And according to the rules, they could basically just say that, "Well, I'm going to oversee your authority because I'm the majority leader." And then that gets rid of filibusters forever. If they do that, if Harry Reid ever does that, if he ever overrides the chair's, you know, authority to have a filibuster, then for the rest of time, it'll never be used.
It'll be
again.
Senate rule.
It'll be gone. It'll be gone. It's not necessarily be a Senate rule because it's already technically in the rules that it can't happen.
It can't be reintroduced.
A different leader.
What I'm saying is that if Harry Reid uses it once, every single majority leader from now until the end of the Senate will use it again. Mm-hmm. It'll always be there as leverage for somebody to use.
Yeah, right? It sets the precedent. And then it's also, historically, it's exactly like the emotions the founders wanted. The House is the representative body of like the passions of the current events, whereas the Senate was designed to be almost like a break on people getting overreacting, you know, like a Newton massacre. That it was designed to be the break on legislation.
And it was supposed to represent the states.
Yeah.
Which is meant to cool the passions.
To cool the passions. So I think 60, quite frankly, should be the standard in the Senate.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Obama, because Obama has had a lackluster presidency, to be honest. And you have an article that you'll read from a little bit here. But you know, I was thinking about it this week. Everybody's talking about how this is a huge defeat for him, how he couldn't get even background checks and a bill that is pretty innocuous, you know, to Democrats and to progressive Republicans. He couldn't get that passed. You know, he put everything into the gun bill. He's gone out. He's stumped for it across the nation, and he couldn't get it done. And, you know, there's something else that nobody really wants to talk about just because of the emotions wrapped in it. You know, he really just was nowhere on the Boston bombing. You know, he gave a speech, because I pointed this out, and you said, "Well, he gave a speech." And it's like, yeah, I know he gave a speech, but nobody in the media is talking about it. It wasn't from the Oval Office. It wasn't significant. His comments were not significant. Joe Biden got more press because he was the first one to speak, just because he was on a teleconference with reporters and someone turned it on. But, you know, Bush, if there was a terrorist attack during Bush.
Oh, he was right down in the rubble. I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, he just was constantly there with...
That's why people loved him so much in the beginning. He's like, he went right down to the World Trade Center and started helping them clean up.
I hate this word. Absolutely hate it, but it's a good descriptor. The optics of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Bush understood the staging to get the message across to... Because he had a definite message that he wanted to present to the American people in these particular times, which is comfort. And Obama just doesn't get that. You know, you look at the Fort Hood shooting, the first words that came out of his mouth after the Fort Hood shooting was a shout-out to some professor at a speech. You know, we don't want to go all Rush Limbaugh here on you, but it is interesting that this president doesn't understand the emotional points like Bush, like W, and like Clinton did. You know, Clinton understood it. He would get out there in front of these situations and lead and be a comforter in chief. Obama just was nowhere.
That's not his personality.
It just isn't.
He's a theorist. He is a true political theorist and a policy wonk. Like, he knows the ins and outs of every
policy.
Doesn't
know how to get his policy pushed forward. And that is why that is one of the troubles for libertarians, too, is that libertarians want to be policy wonks. But the fact is that politics is the people business, mm-hmm. and I shamefully got into an internet fight with some troll today on the internet, and it just, we were having a fun little thread, and then this guy just inserted himself into the thread because it wasn't about him, and he had to insert politics into it and talk about how the Libertarian Party and all libertarians are trying to move it away from the purest ideal of what Mises and Rothbard. It's just like, dude, we're not talking about politics.
No.
We're not talking about policy, and you're being an a-hole, you know, and it's like there is just this part of politics where you have to be a salesman, you have to be able to talk to people, you have to be able to make people feel emotions and express yourself beyond big words.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually done a lot of studies on, you know, what makes people, as far as like relationship fightings, what do people, like when people are upset, what do they want to hear more? Do they want someone to fix? Do they want somebody to fix their problem when they complain about something that they've had happen to them, or do they just want empathy? And I mean, they've actually done studies that everybody wants empathy. Mm-hmm. They don't really care if you're trying to fix their problem. And I mean, that was like relationship stuff. But I mean, it's just people when something bad happens, they want people to empathize with them, and that's what Bush did. He went out there and he said, I'm with you, I'm down here with you, and I feel your pain. I empathize with what you feel. Obama never really goes down that route.
Ironically, we're watching CNN on in the background, and they're talking, Consoler-in-Chief, Obama steps into difficult role again, you know, and talking about his emotions and how he feels about this process.
It makes me think he must have been the worst community organizer on the history of the planet.
It just seems like he's forgotten that. He may have been...
Well, he got elected to the Senate.
He may have... At some point, somewhere along the line, you don't get to the level of president without having these skills. I think the bottom line with Barack Obama is that at some point, he had that in him. He was able to rise to this point because he understands connecting with people, caring about people. You just have to. But for some reason, as president, he just can't get over that hump. And, you know, you watch CNN and you watch the you know, how he's the great communicator and he's, you know, commenting on the tragedy and he's the comforter in chief and they're talking about the hope and all the finer points of his speech. And it's just because it just doesn't connect because people don't want to hear from him during the memorial service 2 days later after a tragedy, after a terrorist attack. They want a leader who comes out that night and says, we're pissed off, we're going to find out who did this, we're going to, you know, every resource is going to be available, have a little bit of passion.
They want him down at the finish line of the Boston Marathon after the attacks, consoling people.
About 10 minutes afterwards. You know, that's what I think Americans ultimately want in a president.
Yeah, I mean, when the media gets there first.
What they get is the teleprompter.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot do it without the teleprompter. And I just don't get it. I don't get the attraction to this guy when he just doesn't have the goods as president.
I disagree that he got to where he was because he connected with people. If you look at the rest of the Senate, I wouldn't say there's one person in particular, outside of maybe Rand Paul, that really connects with people on an individual level. The Senate's more of the chamber of the legislator, of the policy wonk, of the elder statesman diplomat.
Right.
And, you know, he came through the Senate in Illinois, and he really only got that because of his political grandfather and the Illinois Democratic machine.
Right.
Now, he's an incredible orator. You get Barack Obama up in a big crowd, he'll get you fired up, he'll be very moderate.
I saw him live in Plainfield when he was here in town, and you're right, he transfixed you for about 35 minutes. I really thought that this guy could bring America together, and there was something about him that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, what is wrong with me? but you watch him today during the memorial service, and that oration, that skill is just not there.
No, because he's lost the shine. People know who he is now.
He's lost the eye of the tiger.
He's lost the eye of the tiger.
Exactly, because even when he's passionate and he's fired up, like during the gun press conference afterwards, you feel like he's scolding you. You feel like your dad is giving you a lecture about how you let the world down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I don't know. There's just something that just is not.
There's a
connecting.
Disconnect.
Yeah.
There's a total disconnect with the president. And it's funny you say that he just isn't good in that role of consoling, because I would say I don't know one academic that is. Right. I don't, as like, that's his training. I've never met like an academic that's lost in thought that is very good at being a comforting individual.
No, yeah. That's totally true. And I think a good point that, you know, as far as what they wanted him to do, I mean, I remember watching the news, you know, in the past few days, and all these reporters, you know, tried to make the point. Everybody knows that the minute they heard that this happened, they were on a plane out to Boston. I'm just like, why wasn't the president on the plane out to Boston the minute he heard this happen?
Yep.
I mean, Anderson Cooper was there that night.
Yep.
How is it that Anderson Cooper can make it there that night, but Obama can't? I mean, I just, you know, I know there's going to be people listening to this going, you're politicizing it, or you're, you know, what, do you want Obama to be effective or any? Well, guess what? This is a political talk show where we examine the news, and that's just what we do.
And there are times when I'll accept the argument that, like, you know, there are a lot of things he's working on. You know, there were, you know, I'm not going to say more important, but he was extremely tied down in, like, say, a crucial Senate deliberation. But the president has no major policy on the horizon.
Right.
He is, the UK Telegraph called him the lame duck president already.
Already. I mean,
that is sad.
Immigration reform, he's letting Marco Rubio handle it. I mean, that is a 2016 challenger for the other party, and you're just letting him take the lead role in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he lost on guns.
Oh, he got killed.
You know, CISPA, he has a chance to...
Slight redemption
and veto it, like he's threatened to, but...
But it's not a kind of legislation that people will rally around. Like, our generation will really get it, but it's not a national thing to build support.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about Boston. Because we wanted to talk about the more emotional, tougher, angrier topic last. What were your first reactions when you heard or saw it? I mean, what goes through your mind first?
I was completely stunned because you actually alerted me to it when you brought it up, and I wasn't really paying attention. And at first, I thought, man, this is really, like, it just looked like kind of a homemade type of, it didn't look like a terrorist attack. And so I thought, well, it's tax day. There's so many historical things on that day. I didn't want to jump to conclusions, but my initial reaction wasn't terrorist attack, which. Really, over the last 10 years, it probably would have been for the first time ever.
Well, I think even Timothy McVeigh is a terrorist attack.
Yeah, foreign terrorist attack.
Just before we started the show, we record Thursday nights around 7 o'clock. The FBI had just released all the photos. And, I mean, you can't tell that, you know, as CNN put it so tactfully, Wolf Blitzer goes, well, we can't tell if they're Americans or non-Americans.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's slightly racist.
Them non-Americans.
You know, like, he's not... Anyways, so I'm going to just move on before
Melissa
I get called...
Melissa Harris-Perry would not be pleased.
I'm going to move on before I get called slightly racist. But, I mean, these guys look like a couple of college kids. They're about 30, I'd say, with the white baseball cap turned around. They look like they're just kind of walking around in the parade with the backpacks.
They
like they're going
look 30.
From,
see, now you're just an ageist.
Yeah, they don't even look 30, though.
They're just going from Starbucks
the one in the white hat doesn't.
Yeah, just going from Starbucks to Starbucks, man. That's their laptop in the back. I mean, it's, you know, they just look like regular guys. And you don't know what they, you know, one of the analysts on CNN said, you know, this reminds me of the Ottawa, the attempted bombing in Ottawa, where it was a sleeper cell in Ottawa, but nobody in the terrorist movement knew about these guys. They just were trying to present an attack, execute an attack, escape the country to somewhere like Pakistan, where they'd be welcomed, and then they get to join the network because they had successfully attacked the nation.
So it's kind of like how in gangs you have that like glory kill or whatever that gets you initiated.
Yeah, that's almost essentially kind of what he was trying to say, that maybe that's what these guys were doing, because there is zero chatter. There still is zero chatter amongst the networks, according to the FBI this evening. Nobody's taking credit for it. Nobody really knows what happened, but... It was clear that there was coordination, that there was, you know, there was that second bomb, and that is always something that's done to try and hurt first responders, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't need to go into all the details, because we assume by now, if you're listening to this, you've had your fill of the details.
I will say, you know, just a, you know, one thing I think that's worth pointing out is... everyone's heard all the bad over and over and over, but I think, you know, there was a lot of good that happened as well. I mean, there's stories of the runners running straight through the finish line and straight up to the hospital and the first responders to give blood for those who have who were hurt. And then the video that of the national anthem at the Bruins game, that made me choke up a little bit, man. That was awesome. The entire crowd was singing the national anthem. So, I mean, nothing brings a country together like tragedy, unfortunately. But, I mean,
I think Patton Oswalt's, and maybe Patton we'll Oswalt's pull it out thing. And we'll read it. You look at the video from the Boston Globe where the guy takes off. He stands there. He's got his phone and he's recording. He's got a video camera or his phone and he's recording runners running past him. And the blast goes off. You count 3 seconds and he runs towards it. Mm-hmm. And then he stands there and he gets in the middle. He kind of gets pushed out. So he starts walking away from it. And then he hears somebody say, "There may be hurt people." 5 seconds, turns back around and goes back. And he documents another photographer, another reporter, helping pull everything away from the scene. You know, the guy could be taking photos and, you know, making money as a photographer.
Yeah.
And let's, without, I mean, the cowboy let's just be hero, crude. But, he, you know, the cowboy hero.
The
I mean,
cowboy
there's,
hero that went and took the guy that got his leg blown off. And wrapped a tourniquet around it and was mm-hmm. wheeling them to the first responders. I mean, it's stuff like this where, you know, it separates, you know, the heroes from, you know, not the bad people, just the ones that, you know, they stand out as heroes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people, they always say they, you know, an explosion happens and most people run away. These people run towards it.
Right.
I think it was a great example of the American spirit that after this, no one was, except the fringiest of fringes who, you know, I unfriended a lot of people on Facebook.
I unfriended at least 15 to 20 people, and that's not an exaggeration.
I unfriended a lot of people on Facebook after this because, for the most part, everybody in America was, you know, everyone was Bostonian. Mm-hmm. Everybody was an American. Everybody was there. I mean, even the New York Yankees had a we are one or whatever on their. It was New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like oil and water, but I mean, even they were able to put that away and say, you know, we're together. Every single baseball game the day after had a moment of silence. Like I said, the Bruins game, the entire crowd sang the national anthem. The guy just stopped and let the entire crowd sing it. I mean,
if you haven't watched that, it's an absolute must. It is a must. We'll put that on the website.
You know, my first thought when I saw it was, and I hope this doesn't come off as crude, but I'm just telling you my first gut reaction was as follows. This is what the majority of developing countries go through, especially in the Eastern Hemisphere. This is not abnormal. This is just life in America now. We've had a lot of different attempts. This is almost the same exact attempt as what happened in New York in Times Square in 2010. Same types of bombs. This is just the first one where they haven't caught them because there was no intelligence, which is scary. But, you know, this is just life for the rest of the world, and Americans are very fortunate that this happens very rarely to us, and it just is another reminder that you have zero guarantee. It doesn't matter if you have a total police state or if you have total freedom. There is no guarantee in life when you leave your house that you're coming back at the end of the day, and it means that you have to live your life in a way that A, you prepare you, your family, everyone around you for any chance of anything happening. And secondly, you have to treat people with the golden rule and make sure your family, you know, you don't want your last words with somebody, and I know it's tough, but you don't want your last words with somebody to be a fight or an argument, you know, and you've got to reach out and take care of your community. With that being said, Greg, go F yourself. No, I mean, it is, you know, and my next thought really was that this is something that the American government, the American military, well, not even the military, the CIA, inflicts on other countries a lot. And we are seeing in high def and probably the first high definition attack. I mean,
this was an IED. Right?
Yeah.
This is an IED. This is something that, you know, it's not something that we would use in war or anything, but our drones have taken innocent lives.
I think I think these kind of, as far as international law for stuff like this, it's illegal to have bombs that with ball bearings and stuff in it, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's against the Geneva Convention, I believe. You know, and I don't want to come across as sounding cold and heartless. But I think there are times where we need, as a society, there were people saying that we screw the First Amendment. We need to ban any news outlet from ever showing any of these kind of photos, ever showing any of these kind of attacks. And really, if you didn't go on Reddit or 4chan or certain Facebook pages, you didn't really see the gore, but it was there. I mean, you could see really gory photos.
Yeah,
war.
That guy that got his leg blown off.
Oh, ooh. Sick.
We have been fortunate or unfortunate in this country to not see the effects of violence, to not see the effects of war. And we as a nation never have really had that because we've never had war on our soil.
The last full-fledged war on our soil was Civil War, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Pearl Harbor, but that wasn't a war, it was just an attack.
And then 9/11, Japan was in Alaska, but that was it.
9/11 was heartbreaking, but you didn't see blood on the sidewalk like this. I mean, it was heartbreaking, and it made me ill. And I almost, sometimes seeing the end result of violence, it makes you go, I want less of that in the world. And I want to make the world a better place, and it just steals your resolve to fight anything that will have that happen anywhere in the world.
I mean, it touches you on such an instinctive level when you see these kind of things happen. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to come off as a guy who tries to just say, well, we do this all the time, right. You know, be that arrogant libertarian. I mean, it is true that this stuff does happen by us often. And I mean, it doesn't make this any less valid. It doesn't make this attack any less.
And that all
attack.
Assumes it was foreign. I mean, it very well could have been a McVeigh actor.
It
changes
been.
Everything.
Yeah, no, that does. And I think the one of the things that you have to be careful of, a lot of people who a lot of friends of mine have to be careful of is, yes, this does happen on a lot overseas. But we don't want to come off as just saying that, you know, because this happened, look what you guys do to everyone else. Because I think that's the wrong message we want to present.
It is the same as trying to, of all these conservative, basically, they're no better than conspiracy theorists. Well, they let this Saudi terrorist kid go, and he got deported, and it clearly is a Muslim, and you're just trying to...
Eric Rush or whatever?
Eric Rush.
He had that tweet, they're evil, we need to kill them all.
I think he was being sarcastic. I hate to defend him, but I kind of read sarcasm.
Yeah, he's known for joking, too, that way on Twitter.
Yeah, but there was plenty of bad media reactions, and, you know, yes, there is a point to be made, but... You should make it in a way that is sensitive towards the fact that people just lost their lives. Even if you don't know anybody, even if you don't are never going to meet one of the victims of Sandy Hook, or you're never going to meet one of the victims of the Boston bombing, other people have empathy. I know that's surprising to some of us, but...
Not everyone's worked in radio.
Right. Other people aren't dead inside like us. But you look at... And you go, listen... You can make a point, but make it about 3 days later and make it in a way that is sensitive towards the fact that most people do have, you know, an emotional reaction.
Don't try
to
and
stuff.
Degrade the
solemnity of the event.
Yeah, I mean, this happened and it was an enormously big deal. I mean, yes, a lot of people who are libertarians who listen to this are going to try. They won't be able to get over the fact that this happens all the time overseas, and a lot of times it's a result of us. But that doesn't mean that because it... I mean, everything that happens close to home has more resounding effect than stuff that happens overseas. That's just, I mean, I'm sure that happens for other countries as well. Something that happens in the United States, oh, I don't care. It happened in the United States. I live in Tunisia. I don't really care. I mean, it's the same thing. So I just caution all of people who listen to this that don't go out and, you know, just put your foot in your mouth by saying, this is what the warfare state in America does all the time to all these other countries. Because all you're doing is making yourself look like an a-hole.
And you don't know if it was a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, at this point, we don't know if it was a foreign guy. So it could have just been a Timothy McVeigh guy, just like Greg said. And that changes everything. And, I mean, that would be...
Because that's what I was going to say, is what is the appropriate... I mean, obviously, libertarians are going to have a different perspective if it is a foreign terrorist. But if it is indeed a domestic terrorist, that changes absolutely everything from a, especially a human perspective, because what can you do? The only avenue that exists would be mental health legislation. It goes right back to the gun debate, and it leads us right down the rabbit hole. Because I don't know what else can you do against a McVeigh-type actor.
I don't think you can do anything. Yeah, honestly, I don't think there's nothing that can be done against a guy who just sneakingly not. I mean,
look at the nut with the ricin. Okay, mm-hmm. We haven't even talked about that. The ricin. I mean, that's how busy this week has been. There's some nut. I mean, this guy. If we posted on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WeAreLibertarians, we posted a link to his page. You just scroll through this guy's Facebook page and he's loony. Like, he, you know, he posted a picture of an R and then the quote that he had put in the letters, you know, and then the almost the exact time and moment that he was picked up, he wrote,
and he was
somebody's
impersonator.
Somebody's knocking on the door. Who could that be? Oh, it's the FBI. You know, he was an Elvis impersonator. He is a wackadoodle. I mean,
Mississippi.
He was just a nutball. And there's not much that, you know, he probably was isolated. I don't know that there is anything that the government could do to keep somebody like him from, you know,
acting out
and trying to hurt somebody, other than what they've done, which is move the mail off-site and make those precautions so nobody who works in the Capitol or the White House gets hurt.
Yep.
I think something that's important, you know, if we're talking about the appropriate response.
Because let's put it this way. If you think that you can send a letter to the President of the United States and he's actually going to open it up and get poisoned with ricin, you're an idiot.
He doesn't walk out to 1600 Penn and get the mail out of the box and then go back in.
With the mug of coffee and the newspaper in his arm. In his robe.
Obama's not like the Tony Soprano walking out at the morning, Michelle! So,
but I was, my point I'm trying to make, and this is something that I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir with our audience here, and I think a lot of people think this immediately when this stuff happens, is, you know, the appropriate response to this should not be to remove more freedom. I mean, they're talking about this being a terrorist cell now because it's possible that these people were a terrorist cell that were just, you know, covert, just independent terrorist cell and network groups trying to commit harm. It really brings me back to the movie, The Siege, if you've ever seen that. It's a great flick. I know. I always talk about movies, but the message of the movie is that what if the point of all of these attacks was not to, you know, kill people? It was not to, in the movie he was trying to get a shake, but let's say it was not to kill people in the Boston, it's not to just commit fear. What if the point of it was so that we can round up people and put them in cages, which was happened in the movie. But what if the point is to reduce our freedom? What if the point was to have this overreaction? I mean, and if we, you know, and the big point of that movie was torture, which is a great scene with Denzel Washington. I encourage everyone to see this flick. It came out before 9/11. It's unreal. But there's a scene with Denzel Washington. He walks in and they're going to torture this guy for information. And Denzel Washington is like, are you guys crazy? You know, you can't torture this guy. And then basically he's like, he says, what if this isn't even about the shake? What if they want us to round families into cages and stuff? And he says, if you torture this man, then everything we fought for is over and the terrorists have won. And that's exactly that's a line we have to tread carefully, is that if we allow ourselves to get so, you know, if we're so scared that we just get rid of all of our freedoms because we're afraid, then we have let the terrorists win.
And we'll legislate ourselves into our own personal cages.
Yes, and it's something I think that's been made a number of times since 9/11. I'm not trying to make an original thought here, but...
Well, it would be nice if you would, because we're trying to be original.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's just another example where I think we have to get out in front of this and point out that this was a terrible tragedy, and we don't want this stuff to happen, and we want to do what we can to stop it from happening, but we have to put things in perspective, and we can't give up our liberties, or we can't give up our basic rights as individuals because we're afraid. The world is unsafe. You know, there is, like Chris said, there is no guarantee you'll come home at the end of the day, but, you know, these freedoms that we have are worth fighting for, and they're not worth giving up because we're scared. I mean, the world is a scary place. Your freedom is worth the unknown. Don't give up your liberties because you're afraid, because then the terrorists win.
And it's just not the appropriate time to talk about the underlying causes of why, if it were, you know, not a domestic terrorist, because that usually, any terrorist is mentally ill.
Yeah.
Let's put it this that way, you know, but
they're either getting virgins or they're crazy in the head.
Yeah, there's serious socioeconomic. They got brain problems.
Psychosomatic.
Yes. Yeah, all those words.
Psychosomatical.
They have all of it. So they have all of it. But at the end of the day, we'll get into underlying causes of terrorism. I mean, there are things that our government could do that could do differently that would not cause these kind of attacks. But now is not the appropriate time to really get into that.
And so, I've been incredibly proud of how we've reacted so far. Like, most of the op-eds I've read in the news have been, you know what? We got this. We didn't back down. We didn't run for our lives. The Boston people ran right into it, like you said, Creighton. Yeah. We're not afraid. Now, granted, we don't know what the cause was yet, and that might change the narrative.
Then I'll be afraid.
Mm-hmm. But right now, we've stood up and we've stood strong and said, nope, we got it.
All right, well, we got to wrap up. So let's tackle, you know, if you want to talk about CISPA, if you want to hit that real quick.
Well, I would just say, everybody who listens to this, make sure you call your senators, email them, get a hold of them, tell them not to vote for it. It passed the House today.
Especially the Republicans, because the Republicans are the ones who are voting for it and not the Democrats.
Yes, the Democrats, actually, there were more no votes on the part of Democrats than there were on the Republicans in the House, and there are less Democrats in the House.
Here in Indiana, it was all the small government Republicans that voted for it.
Todd Rokita, that Tea Partier him.
I know.
And you know what? Wasn't he one of the guys who voted? Did he vote against SOPA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah. So.
Just, man, only if they're watching, man. They only vote one way if you're watching. They vote another if you're not.
ACLU had a four-part essay on it, and they were talking about there are ways to get this worked out where it does actually protect us from cyber attacks and protects personal identification through the data. So as long as those provisions get in, I don't think it's a horrible law, but right now it's awful.
The idea of the federal government having anything to do with the internet.
That's true, too.
The underlying premise of the federal government and corporations being able to share information with each other when there are cyber attacks from China or Russia makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's all just be adults and say that makes sense because why wouldn't AT&T or GE or some other company be able to go to the federal government and tell them what's going on or vice versa? You know, if the NSA knows that GE is about to be attacked, why couldn't they go and talk to them? The problem is that this is just wide open. There needs to be very, very, very tight controls on what specifically the federal government should be allowed to do.
Yeah, I think another thing that people who are against this need to make sure that they're tempered in their when they talk about it. Like, don't go out there saying that this is some conspiracy legislation to remove, because the freedom movement exists on the internet and all this kind of stuff, and we have to protect the freedom movement, because without the internet, the freedom movement never would have happened. And I don't think that's in their head at all. I don't think that that's what they're thinking about. I think they're thinking about what Chris was talking about, and the danger is that them being so tunnel vision on it, I think, you know, makes them forget that, you know, they can actually, you know, run roughshod of a lot of things, and they can do a lot of damage. So they need to refine it. And honestly, I don't like the federal government being involved in regulating the internet in any way whatsoever. So as long as they can keep any regulatory apparatus out of the internet on the part of the federal government, I will be much happier with the legislation.
Yeah, and if they make it a voluntary opt out for the consumer, I'd like that as well. But like, it kind of hit home for me because actually my company email got hacked on Sunday by a Chinese hacker, and because they were able to get into it, they also had access to all my Google documents, which is where I keep like my articles of incorporation, my spreadsheets for income statement, profit and loss. And so they could have seen that. They could have seen my employer identification number. And so if I had the option to say, hey, I want to know who did this, or here, Google, give this to the federal government so they can find out the hole that got in, I actually understand that. I don't like it if it was involuntary, but as long as I have the option of saying, track this person down or find out how it happened, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Figure out how they got in so it can stop and you're more secure. I mean, so, all right. Let's wrap up and talk about whatever you want to talk about. Give your last points for the show. Greg Lenz.
I like Creighton. Call your congressman. Don't just attack him as a corporate fascist pig. Attack them as, hey, this bill has merits, but we need to get the right the right provisions into it.
And to anybody who's listening, I know a lot of people they don't think calling your representative works. It works. It really does work. I actually went down to Louisville this past week to see Rand Paul speak, and Thomas Massie was there. Mm-hmm. And a main point of his speech was how, you know, their phone, his phone for his office. I mean, if you've ever been to Washington, you've ever been in the office buildings.
Real quick, to explain who Thomas Massie is.
Thomas Massie is a congressman from Kentucky. He's awesome. Look him up. You know, he's great. If you've ever been to Washington, you've ever seen the offices that these congresspeople have, senators or congressmen, you know, you go in there, what it is there's one room that's like got the desk for the people to sit in, like the secretaries, mm-hmm. and there's like there's pictures and an American flag and all this stuff. And then there's one door where their private office is for the congressman. That's it. It's not like they're an entire building. And so when you call them and that phone rings, they hear it. If they're in that office, they will hear the call.
They see it and they walk out and they go, "What's going on?"
Yeah. So
and they ask about it and
calls
they
work.
Log
Give
all
them a
that
call.
And they make sure that they record everything. And both at the state level, the local level, the federal level, it does work when you make phone calls.
And I know as far as the Senate, our representative in Indiana, Coates,
Joe Donnelly or
Coates, he's actually fairly responsive with replying to you to inquiries or questions or comments you have to make, even if you call him. If you give them your name and your contact info, he'll actually send you a letter saying this is why I did this and stuff, which honestly I don't really care. I know that for the most part I don't really agree with what he stands on and stuff, because I don't think he's a good senator, but he is very responsive. I give him respect for that. I think Andre Carson's done that once. Todd Rokita is very good at it, but our old representative in the 4th District,
Booyer,
yeah. He was great at it. Mm-hmm. He would send you a letter every single time you called him, you emailed him. So, they do pay attention to this stuff, and they will get in contact with you. And I'm sure it wasn't just like him. I'm sure it was like one of his interns or something. But nevertheless, they do recognize when people are bringing up these issues. So give him a call. Send him an email. You know, if you make enough of a noise, they will hear it. I mean, most people, these laws pass, they don't get contacted for anything. So, you know, one phone call to them is one thing, but like five phone calls and they start raising eyebrows and stuff. So it works. Give them a call. Tell them not to support Facebook.
Maybe build a Facebook group of like-minded libertarian friends in your area and make a little action alert thing. Put it out on Facebook. Hey, when we need to make phone calls, get into this group. We'll let you know. Don't use it for anything other than that, so people don't tune it out. So they know that every 2 or 3 months, there's going to be something from you where they get an email and a message saying, okay, here we go. Or, you know,
time to organize.
Hit up their Facebook. Every congressman, senator has a Facebook page. Hit that up. Post stuff on their wall. Hit them up on Twitter. I almost said Tweeter.
Whoa.
Tweeter. It's like Varsity Blues. Hit them up on Twitter. Because they will recognize it. Now, if that doesn't change their vote, that's probably because they're politicians. And
time to vote them out.
They don't care.
You didn't have enough. You didn't have enough money.
Yeah, but nevertheless, at least make the attempt. I mean, there's no harm. There's absolutely nothing to lose with giving them a call. Even if you talk to an intern, tell them what you think, and then they'll take it down, and they might tell the guy, they might not. But there's no harm. It takes 5 minutes.
At the state and the federal level, everything is recorded. Everything is written down. It's all – they have a record of you calling, knowing how many people called, all that good stuff. So, all right, last thing.
I just had one real quick thing to say. Ted Cruz, I know we gave him a hard time about possibly being Canadian.
No, he is Canadian.
Well –
no, he was born in Canada.
He totally redeemed himself. Did you watch the gun debate? He proposed the Grassley-Cruz Amendment, which essentially was funding mental health, funding the enforcement, and hiring more DAs of illegal guns. And so it gave all the people who were on the fence the ability to vote for something without having to actually vote for the bill.
Right.
He saved the day.
He's a smart fellow.
He is wily.
For a Canadian.
He's good. I told you guys, man. You guys,
Creighton
is a small government Republican.
You guys did not believe me when I first told you. I was like, this guy's pretty good.
Him and Rand might be unbeatable.
Him and Rand, Mike Lee.
If there's enough blood left in your head, Creighton, can you give us a final thought for the week?
I mean, I don't know. I'd say, you know, just hearts go out to the Boston people.
Yeah.
I think I don't know if the reason I played the national anthem because I think it was relevant. Chris thought it would be hokey, I think, but I actually watched the Bruins thing, and I was like, you know, this is something that we should probably put on our podcast. I mean, we're not as big as a Bruins game, but I think I think it's worth it, because I mean, our hearts do go out to these Boston folks. I think everybody is a Bostonian, and you know, we want to catch these people, and so that's what I'll end with.
Our hearts also go out to the people in Texas.
Oh yes, the Texas thing.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, I saw just now while we were doing the podcast, the first aerial shots during the day. It looks pretty bad. Why the hell would you
total it?
We have to talk about zoning laws at some point, because why would you build an apartment complex and a nursing home next to a fertilizer factory? Good grief! But
smells good.
Yeah. So our hearts go out to everybody. Two things. One is Paul Gabel. Paul Gabel started a Facebook page. Chris Spangle said that if I get 100 likes, we'll have Travis Wyke and Paul Gabel on the show.
Did he get 100 likes?
No.
Oh.
But because he's from Boston and he has a unique perspective, he grew up in Boston, I said, all right, here's your shot. It's your big time to shine, man. Time to come on the show. Oh, I got a meeting. Can I call in? No.
Does he live here in Indy?
He lives like 15 minutes away.
What's he do?
He was the one who called earlier because he's like, hey, it's Paul Gabel. I just wanted to say, if you want me on the show here, I'll play it for you real quick.
Chris, it's Paul. About 6:45, the meeting's over, so I'm headed home. Just give me a call whenever you need me to talk about Boston on the show or whatever. Talk to you later.
Yep. Well, Paul, congratulations. You made it on the show.
He debuted. So he debuted.
The last point is we cannot go a podcast without admonishing libertarians in some way. Please, for the love of God, I've got 5,000 Facebook friends. I'm very big on Facebook, Greg. And the majority of them are libertarians. The whole, oh, well, guess what? Next they're going to ban fertilizer factories. Next they're going to ban
pressure cookers.
You really got me the first 100 times I saw that joke. That's not original anymore. It's not funny.
It wasn't original like 10 seconds after this happened.
It wasn't. No. I mean, it just is like, come on. Think up new material, please. If you're doing it, just don't do it anymore.
You're not going to get noticed being boring. We have to be held to a higher standard.
Yeah. And also, it was not a missile that hit the fertilizer factory.
No.
You were defriended. So I'm taking a tough stance against conspiracy fellas.
Yes.
Conspiracies fellas. How about you?
Yeah, no, I unfriended a couple people for this stuff. I mean, there's one where it showed the guy that got his leg blown off already had his leg blown off, what the media is telling us.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just, there. This is not the time. I mean, give me a break. Is your life so meaningless that this is all you can think about is whenever something happens, you try and make it be a conspiracy? Get over yourself.
Creighton, I saw a man on a roof.
Yeah, there was a guy on the roof in a city. That's a conspiracy. Maybe if we put a big red arrow at him, people will think it's a big deal.
I've got this close crop photo of the lady from Newtown, and then she's been used in Fox on as one of the victims who died in the explosions. See?
No,
that's how conspiracy theorists try to convince you. They just say, see?
Picture yourself as the libertarian Donald Trump with his birther conspiracy. That's how ridiculous you are.
Me?
No, I'm saying people that take that conspiracy. Look how dumb Donald Trump looks when he goes to CPAC and says,
well,
Barack Obama was born in Kenya.
Looking dumb is just a state of existence for Donald Trump.
I'd take his bank account, but other than that.
Yeah, go to creatingmaya.com and look for the Uncontrollables podcast. You can also find it in iTunes. I did a show with Maya the night of the explosion, actually, and we really get into conspiracy theories. So if you are into conspiracy theories, we apologize. We love having you as listeners. We try not to talk about it. That podcast would probably not be for you. We get into, you know, the Maya predicts, Maya, our explosive expert here on We Are Libertarians, talks a little bit about the bomb. We talk about our reactions and other stuff. So check that out. That's a little plug for Maya. All right, fellas, good show.
We'll do better next time.
I hope so. All right, we'll see you next week. Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell. This podcast is produced by What Is a Hoosier Productions.